Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes, offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Wildlife Federation, a private nonprofit conservation organization working on behalf of Florida's fish, wildlife, and their habitats, as well as outdoor education and sustainable nature-based recreation. The Florida Wildlife Federation, since 1936, fwfonline.org. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Federal officials hold a hearing about offshore drilling in Tallahassee. Not everyone is happy about how it's conducted.
They were not taking oral comments, and that was something that really bothered the environmental groups because they said this is way too important for you guys to just sit up here in a room and not talk to us.
Also tonight, state lawmakers want to roll back penalties for people who display a concealed weapon. Gun control advocates worry the bill opens the door to open carry, but advocates say it's about protecting law-abiding citizens.
This bill does not legalize open carry. I wish it did.
We'll also get an update on a plan to give bullied students vouchers to attend other schools and a push to lower the minimum employee age at state prisons to 18. It's day four of week five in the 2018 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. We kick off this version of Capitol Report with our own Lynn Hatter, once again returning from covering an event that was today in downtown Tallahassee, not at the Capitol, but at the what we used to call the Round Holiday Inn. It is now Four Points by Sheraton, but you were not there just for the buffet at lunch, Lynn.
No, I was there for the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management's only public hearing about the proposed offshore oil drilling plan that was rolled out about a month ago. This is the federal proposal. It's part of a five-year review where the federal government takes a look and decides whether or not to offer more additional leases for oil exploration in federal waters. And right now, the Trump administration has proposed 47 new leases and is considering opening up areas that had been previously closed, specifically the Atlantic side of Florida, as well as the eastern Gulf of Mexico. And both, as we know, are very sensitive areas, especially that eastern Gulf.
Now, we had some assurances from the Trump administration, at least the head of the Department of Environmental Protection, to Governor Rick Scott that there would be no drilling, at least in the Gulf of Mexico. Is that not a done deal?
Supporters of this say no doesn't necessarily mean no. In fact, one of the groups that was down there today, they say wink, wink, nod, nod. As far as that goes, the governor's comments to Secretary Zinke, Florida's Department of Environmental Protection did actually write a letter to the federal government stating its opposition to expanding offshore oil drilling off Florida waters, but there are groups who say we need this in order to secure the U.S.'s energy future.
Now, what was going on as far as the commentary that was going to come out in the course of this hearing today?
It wasn't exactly a hearing. What the Bureau was doing was taking public comment, but they weren't taking oral public comment. And that is something that has angered a bunch of environmental groups. In fact, there were dozens in attendance actually right across the hall holding an oral public comment hearing. So what the Bureau was doing, they had tables set up in one of the conference rooms. People could come ask questions, then go to a bank of computers and formally enter, you know, their comments there, but they were not taking oral comments. And that was something that really bothered the environmental groups because they said this is way too important for you guys to just sit up here in a room and not talk to us. Now, that's not what happened. Over time, the groups did come in and began to mingle with one another, but it was very peaceful. But there's still a lot of opposition to offshore oil drilling in the state of Florida. And we should also say it's a very bipartisan issue.
Where do we go from here? What happens next?
We are in a 60-day review period where the Bureau is going to take all of the public comments it gets, sit down, sort of review where everybody stands, and then go from there. Now, again, I did say this is part of sort of a 5-year review plan. There will be no final decision on whether to even offer these two leases in federal waters off Florida shores until 2021. So there's still a very long way to go. But given what happened during the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spill, the effort to kind of keep oil and gas exploration out of Florida waters is a very bipartisan issue.
And if you want to bring a big crowd to any kind of gathering, just mention offshore drilling in Florida and you will be guaranteed standing room only.
You will sound the alarm for sure.
Florida Public Radio's Lynn Hatter. Thanks so much, Lynn.
Thank you, Tom.
Florida lawmakers want to cut penalties for people who accidentally show their concealed weapons. The bill is ready for a floor vote in the House, but Kate Payne reports gun control advocates are worried the plan is a step towards open carry.
Florida is one of just a handful of states to ban the open carry of guns, but Floridians do have the right to concealed carry if they have a license. And there are real consequences if someone flashes what should be a concealed weapon, whether they have a permit or not.
Current law does not distinguish between someone who may open carry and does not have a concealed weapons permit and someone who may open carry and also has a concealed weapons permit. They treat them equally as a second-degree misdemeanor.
Cape Coral Republican Representative Dane Eagle wants to change that.
A person who has a concealed weapons permit, rather than receiving that second-degree misdemeanor for temporary and open carry, they would receive a $25 civil citation for the first offense, $500 civil citation for the second offense. The third offense would be that second-degree misdemeanor.
Eagle's bill would also change the ban on open carry. He says the law should be more forgiving when some of the state's 1.8 million permit holders slip up. For reference, he says there are about 150 of these cases per year.
So these law-abiding, otherwise well-intentioned citizens are being arrested and prosecuted with criminal charges for this accident.
Eagle's bill would allow for temporary displays instead of brief ones. And gun control advocates argue the difference between the two is significant.
This change from brief to temporary was not noted in the bill analysis, and it is important to understand and to consider the implications of this change.
Jamie Ito is with Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America.
So the safe harbor in this bill is much broader than that under existing law.
She says the change amounts to a backdoor legalization of open carry.
Furthermore, the reductions in penalties found at Section 790.053, subparagraph 3, for conduct that is deemed to violate this law, to a mere non-criminal $25 fine will incentivize people to violate the law.
Marion Hammer, who represents the NRA, insists the bill is not about open carry.
This bill does not legalize open carry. I wish it did.
But some Democratic lawmakers have issues with the language, too.
I think that we're opening a door here that is wider than what I take from what I've heard to be what the sponsor intends.
Dania Beach Representative Joe Geller.
I think the law as currently written adequately balances the fact that sometimes something happens by accident with attempting to deter someone from some kind of a brandishment.
Open carry or not, Rick Soskis is worried about the presence of guns in public, period. He's a retired nurse and was a longtime gun owner. But after 30 years of working in an emergency room, he told state lawmakers he doesn't carry anymore.
Where there are no guns, there are no gun battles. Where there are fewer guns, there are fewer gun battles. Gun thefts, gun suicides, gun homicides, and accidental gun deaths.
The measure passed its last House committee on a largely party-line vote. It's now ready for the floor, but the plan is getting virtually no traction in the Senate. Lawmakers there have already blocked a similar bill. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
still to come on Capitol Report. Florida lawmakers moving forward on a controversial scholarship program for students who have been bullied.
This is a bill about victims and providing the parents of victims an opportunity to have all the information at their disposal so they can make a decision for their child.
Florida's prison system may soon be recruiting some younger prison guards.
You can carry a gun and serve in the U.S. military and protect us from all enemies. Certainly you're mature enough to be considered by the department.
And some members of the Florida House insist that displaying the state's official motto will restore the importance of patriotism in Florida's public school system.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
While Florida lawmakers approved funding for the so-called HOPE Scholarship Program as part of the House budget proposal, Sean Mulcahy reports bills creating the program are still making their way through the committee process.
So here's my question. Are your policies deficient? If they are deficient, and you don't believe that those school district policies go far enough, then what should they be, and do you want us to mandate it?
I'm talking about the serious implications.
A bill that would provide students with voucher-like scholarships if they are victims of bullying has been the subject of significant debate. The HOPE scholarship would be funded through tax revenue generated from motor vehicle sales, and motorists would have the option to donate part of their sales to the scholarship in exchange for a tax credit. Naples Republican Representative Byron Donalds, sponsor of the bill, says it's about more than just bullying.
This is a bill to help the victims of our state to escape their schools if they cannot function anymore.
Proponents of the measure argue it's necessary to get students out of dangerous settings. Leon County parent Danielle Shackelford says she saw the need for this program firsthand when her daughter faced bullying at school.
My daughter was a victim of bullying, and we had to wait until the next year for me to apply for her to become a Step It Up for student. So the fact that this option is now on the table is such a blessing.
The program, a priority of House Speaker Richard Corcoran, has met sizable opposition, namely from Democrats and teachers' unions. They worry expanding taxpayer dollars for private schools won't address bullying and will hurt public schools.
It does not guarantee that we're going to deal with the problem of how do we stop the bullying. It does not guarantee that the recipient of a HOPE scholarship will get a quality education.
That was Orlando Democrat Representative Bruce Antone. And the Southern Poverty Law Center's Scott McCoy echoes similar objections.
By convincing their parents that they should go to the private school, you're actually depriving those bullied kids of many of the federal and state protections against bullying and harassment, because none of those laws apply in the private school setting.
The Pre-K through 12 Appropriations Subcommittee approved the Senate companion bill Thursday. It has one more stop in the Appropriations Committee before it moves to the Senate floor for a vote. A similar measure in the House is headed for that chamber's floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sean Mulcahy in Tallahassee.
A bill to end the use of steroids in racing greyhounds is moving ahead after sidestepping an amendment some say would have derailed the measure. Regan McCarthy has that.
The Senate Agriculture Committee has approved Republican Dana Young's measure banning the use of steroids in racing greyhounds. The drug is typically used as birth control for the female dogs, but Young says she believes the practice has too many negative side effects.
The bottom line for doing this bill is that if these greyhounds are going to be forced to race, which I do not believe they should at least be treated humanely. And I do not believe that dosing female greyhounds with male testosterone hormones is humane treatment.
But Jeff Kottkamp, a former lieutenant governor who now works for the Florida Greyhound Association, disputes Young's characterization of the industry.
Nobody forces a greyhound to run. They are born super athletes. They run over 40 miles an hour. It's in their DNA.
The issue can be confusing.
Young says that's in part because it's muddied by changing arguments brought each year by the industry and conflicting information. For years, debates on the subject have usually centered on questions like West Palm Beach Democratic Senator Bobby Powell's.
Is it possible that even if it's low dose, that it does enhance performance, or is it that this dose takes out whatever it is that a steroid would do to enhance performance?
The answer to that question, of course, depends on who you ask. Kottkamp says, no way.
I think the evidence of that is simply that female racing dogs don't win all the races. They actually win fewer races than by percentage of the population of racing dogs.
But Young argues there's no way to know.
We don't know because there's no testing at DBPR for steroids. We don't know whether it's a low dose or high dose. And we don't know whether they're dosing males as well. We have no way to tell that. No way. And don't forget that this is gambling. This is people gamble on these animals. And if some of these animals are on steroids, which are performance-enhancing drugs, that is why we do not allow them in human athletes in any way. They are performance-enhancing drugs. And it is basically akin to cheating if some of the animals are doped and some are not.
Kottkamp and other industry members like Ramon Mori with the Florida Greyhound Association are pushing a bill that explicitly permits the use of steroids in racing greyhounds for birth control and other uses as prescribed by a veterinarian.
Just to put it in context, all we're trying to do is provide these animals and the individuals that raise and take care of these animals with options when it comes to birth control.
Democratic Senator Kevin Rader is carrying that bill and filed it as an amendment to Young's bill, but withdrew that amendment before a vote could be taken. Young's bill is moving forward unamended. It has one committee stop left to go. That's also the case for a similar measure in the House. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
A bill allowing Florida prison officials to recruit more young correctional officers is continuing to move in both chambers of the Florida legislature, and we get that story from Sasha Cordner.
After speaking with Prison Chief Julie Jones, St. Petersburg Republican Jeff Brandis is sponsoring a Senate bill authorizing the Florida Department of Corrections to start hiring correctional officers at age 18 instead of 19.
The goal here really is to allow us to begin to recruit earlier. And one of the challenges the secretary has identified is when she goes to these recruitment fairs and talks to in schools, that she'd like to begin to introduce people to the profession of being a corrections officer. One of the challenges she has is she says, well, you can't start until you're 19. The ability for them to get training directly out of high school to begin to integrate into the corrections officer system will really allow a much larger pool of candidates to look at this as a long-term profession.
The measure also includes a condition that any correctional officer under the age of 19 is not allowed to supervise inmates.
Today, the simple standard is 19. 19, you can begin to supervise inmates. I personally had an issue with very young individuals being able to directly supervise. So this creates a new category of a corrections specialist that simply allows them to go through the initial training and begin to work in the facility, but not directly supervise inmates. I think it's a good compromise, but it really does allow almost every person in the state now that is of 18 years old to look at this as a new profession.
Still, Ricky Dixon says the 18-year-old would still be able to perform other duties. He's the Deputy Secretary of Institutions for the Florida Department of Corrections.
They would not supervise inmates is the key point. They would not be permitted to supervise inmates until they turn 19. They would assist with search processes, control room type of environments, along beside a mentor teaching them those duties, but not be alone.
Jared Torres is the Legislative Affairs Director at the Florida Department of Corrections. He says this bill is not only an agency priority, it came highly recommended by an independent auditor of the state's prison system.
The Association of State Correctional
administrators, so ASCA, it's a national association, we're all state secretaries for each of their corrections. ASCA put in their report specifically that states should look at policies like this to try and help recruit. Florida, unfortunately, we have critical staffing levels in our facilities, and we're trying to do everything we can, you know, to bring in some new blood and to beef up staffing.
Ocala Republican Senator Dennis Baxley likes the bill. He calls it a reasonable plan.
You can carry a gun and serve in the U.S. military and protect us from all enemies. Certainly, you're mature enough to be considered by the Department of Corrections. And particularly, this almost creates an internship where they can be learning the culture before they're actually put into situations that are volatile and difficult as direct supervision.
Still over in the Florida House, not everyone is completely sold on the idea. While she voted for the bill in its first House committee, Maldora Republican Representative Jennifer Sullivan says she's unsure she'll vote for it when it gets to the floor. In the past, state prison officials have said they are seeing most of their turnover in their younger employees, which has Sullivan worried lowering the age will make that worse.
I know because it's been shared with me that there's a hard time keeping correctional officers because they come, the state trains them, the state doesn't pay as high, and then they go and work for a county. So my fear is if we are now creating a recruiting process for recruiting even more young individuals, that the turnover is going to become even greater, that we're going to be investing our dollars into training them, and then they're going to be leaving to go other places. So for those reasons, I have great hesitation.
And while he too shares those concerns, Miami Democratic Representative David Richardson says he also sees the benefits of the measure.
We do need to recruit more people, and I see a benefit of us being able to go into high schools and talk to students before they have a break after they graduate, right? So if we're waiting until they turn 19 years old, most students are graduating when they're 17 or 18 years old, and they may have 6 months or 9 months before they turn 19. So in that interim time, they've gone and found another job, and so they're no longer interested in a career with the Florida Department of Corrections. So I think this is going to help our recruitment.
The House measure has already unanimously passed all its committees and is waiting to be taken up by the full chamber. Its Senate companion bill has passed two committees and has one more to go before a floor vote. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kordner.
And now for a look at some other Capitol developments today. Here's Bob Brooks from our sister operation, the Florida Channel.
Another busy day here in the Capitol. Let's get right to it. House Bill 851, Lost or Abandoned Personal Property. This bill allows theme parks and entertainment complexes, public food service establishments, and public lodging establishments to dispose of or donate personal property recovered on its premises. The bill passed Commerce with a committee substitute and now heads to the full House. A change in the Fire Prevention Code, Senate Bill 746, establishes a 3-year exemption to the Florida Fire Prevention Code to allow for the placement of waste containers within the hallways of apartment buildings that utilize a doorstep refuse and recycling collection service. It passed regulated industries. It now has to pass rules and then to the floor for debate. Senate Bill 252, entitled State Employee Higher Education Fee Waivers. This bill provides that credit hours eligible for tuition and fee waivers be determined on a calendar year basis rather than each academic term. It passed Higher Education Appropriations and has one more committee stop. Senate Bill 996, entitled Cardiopulmonary Resuscitation in Public Schools. This bill requires school districts to provide instruction in cardiopulmonary resuscitation and the use of an automated external defibrillator. It also requires students to study and practice psychomotor skills associated with CPR at least once before graduating from high school. The bill received a favorable nod from the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Pre-K-12 Education. It will now need the approval of the Appropriations Committee before going to the Senate floor. Senate Bill 780, Prohibition Against Contracting with Scrutinized Companies. This bill prohibits a company that is on the Scrutinized Companies That Boycott Israel list, or companies that are engaged in boycotting Israel, from bidding on, submitting a proposal for, or entering into or renewing a contract with a state agency or a local government. By a vote of 8-2, it passed the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on General Government and must now pass the Appropriations Committee before going to the floor. From the Florida Channel, I'm Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, a bill would require the display of the state motto, "In God We Trust," in every pre-K through grade 12 public school in Florida, as we hear from Devondra Alston.
Displaying the motto will restore the importance of patriotism in the Florida school system. Bill sponsor Democrat Representative Kimberly Daniel says,
"The motto is inscribed on the walls of this great capital. It's also inked on our currency and should be conspicuously displayed so that this generation will have a revelation of the foundation of this country."
The president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Reverend Gary Johnson, says the motto will help kids feel safe.
"One nation under God with liberty and justice for all. That's the saying. But what is the action? When kids come inside of a school system where they're faced with obstacles every day, kids need to be reassured that their safety is beyond things that they can see and touch."
But Sue Waltansky of the group Common Ground worries about the cost for the school districts.
"I'm concerned that if we put an unfunded mandate to display our motto in the schools with the amount of funding we have now, that there may not be the funds to give it the respect it deserves. So if this is going to be unfunded to the schools, you may turn out with something less respectful than our flag."
But Representative Daniels points out, as long as the motto is visible, there are no specifications on how big it must be.
"Actually, I don't know the dimensions. And, you know, just like anything else, when policy is put in place, as long as it's displayed."
The bill is now heading for the House floor, but its Senate companion has not yet been heard in its first committee stop. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Devondra Alston.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank Devondra Alston, Sean Mulcahy, and our sister operation, the Florida Channel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FBRCapReport. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes, offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition, protection, and stewardship of public and private conservation lands to protect Florida's waters, and to Everglades restoration and fish and wildlife conservation. The Florida Wildlife Federation, fwfonline.org. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.